Morning, everyone. I call to order a meeting for Senate Hess. Recognize Senator Ellis, Senators Green, and Lehman, myself, Senator Wilkin. Purpose of today's meeting is threefold. We'll continue testimony on Senate Bill 203 having to do with phonics curriculum. And we're going to have a brief presentation on traumatic brain injury. And then we'll have new legislation introduced, Senate Bill 306 regarding tax exemptions and child support cases. Let's see, anything to come before the committee before we continue with Senate Bill 203? Seeing none, then we'll begin. We left off on Friday with four or five people in the hearing room here to testify, and they'll have a chance today. And I apologize for those people that came and sat and then weren't able to testify. I tend to favor the people on the teleconference network as my small contribution to keeping the legislature here in Juneau. So the more we can involve the people on teleconference and inconvenience them, the better. And so the way I do that is to make sure that the teleconference people are taken care of first. So if, with your indulgence, we have four people that are joining us this morning, and we'll take care of them and then come back to the hearing room. And Laura, we probably won't get to your bill until maybe 10 o'clock. If you're welcome to sit here if you'd like. If not, we'll give you a call. All right, let's start and continue with the public testimony on Senate Bill 203. We have online this morning Petersburg, Fairbanks, and Ketchikan. And let's start with Ketchikan. We have Dr. William Pfeiffer and Mr. Johnson. We'll start with them. Dr. Pfeiffer, good morning. Thanks for joining us. If you could please state your name and your affiliation, and please limit your testimony to 5 minutes. Good morning.
Good morning. Dr. Bill Pfeiffer. I'm a chiropractor in Ketchikan with 5 children in public schools. First, I'd like to thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak to a bill that has the potential to positively change the lives of so many of our young Alaskans. My children are in grades 3, 5, 7, 9, and 10. I served 6 years on the Ketchikan College Advisory Council. Community College, which is part of the University of Alaska. I currently sit on the School District's Ready for Work Committee and have served on its MAP Committee. My interest and efforts in K-12 education started when my oldest daughter was in kindergarten. At the end of that year, my wife and I called a meeting with both the teacher and the principal and stated to them that our daughter had learned absolutely nothing throughout the entire year. They both agreed, and that was the end of any discussion. There was something wrong with this picture, and I've been working since to change it. I've done a lot of reading and research over the years, and this legislation will bring the state closer to getting every child to learn to read so that they will be able to read to learn. The legislature and the Department of Education recognize the enormous number of children across the country who are not proficient readers or spellers. The general public sees it on a daily basis. The question today is, what do we do? CSFB 203 is your commitment to make reading a priority in the state of Alaska for every child. It is much broader than phonics alone and is appropriately called the Literacy Restoration Act. It involves a clear message from the legislature that reading failure is not inevitable, and that we're going to insist that these children have the opportunity to make choices later on in life because they are going to learn to read. And considering this bill, you will have to ask yourself if there is validated, reliable, and replicatable research out there that answers the question of what do we do? The answer is yes. You need to understand the different research out there and what is credible and replicatable. I am sure you will be hearing from some of the experts directly and will hear references to ReadLine and the research done through the National Institute of Health. I will make reference to some of the testimony that Dr. Douglas Carnine made to the Washington State Legislature on this same subject of reading. Dr. Carnine is a professor at the University of Oregon and director of the National Center for Improving Tools of Education. I have a complete transcript of that testimony for anyone who is interested. But let me four readers in the ninth grade. Then, if you consider a third grade child of poverty going to school with other four children who has been retained and is reading a year below grade level, his chance of graduating from high school is near zero. Can we afford to wait until fourth grade to test and determine that a child cannot read? You know the answer, and that is why you have this bill in front of you. The value of explicit systematic phonics has been well established in the research and is a vital part of any comprehensive reading program. Let me tell you as a parent that you will likely hear the mantra that, of course, we teach phonics. So there is no reason to create legislation like SB 203. Most of us do not know what the research-based explicit systematic phonics instruction includes. The reality is that many teachers, to no fault of their own, don't know and were never taught how to teach an explicit systematic phonics program that is research-based. Too often, single-letter and dual-letter blend sounds are the extent of the phonics instruction. I don't know how many frustrated parents have come to me with their children's paper filled with misspelled words. These same parents are often told that the misspelled words like W-O-K for walk and L-I-T for light are evidence that they know their phonics. This level of phonics is not sufficient. In fact, Dr. Carnine states that, quote, when teachers say they are using phonics, it may not be the careful, systematic use of phonics as indicated in the research. So they're not going to get the benefit of actually using the research-based phonics, unquote. Further states that the NIH research has proven quite clearly that most students will not learn to read naturally by merely immersing them in a print-rich environment. Quote, it is not true that good readers use pictures and context or skipping and guessing to decode words. Those are strategies of individuals who cannot read well, but in fact, whole language is teaching the strategies that characterize disabled readers. What has been done to train teachers in reading in many states was just the opposite of research. You are spending precious state money to train teachers to do the wrong thing. You've got a problem. We need to decide what research we're going to believe and whether an agreement can be made that any training and instructional material dollars will be used in a consistent manner to get all kids to read, which follows that research. We should learn from the states of other states like California, who has 5 out of 6 approved reading programs that do not follow the research. We must also be aware of conflicts of interest. Dr. Carnine brings up the fact that the leaders of the two national research organizations in reading are also authors of the programs that do not follow the research.
Dr. Pfeiffer?
Yes.
If I could ask you to please conclude.
I have a copy of this, and I'll send a copy of this up for your review of the rest of my comments. With all the research supporting this bill, with the Learning First Alliance of 12 national educational organizations, including the NEA and AST, supporting research-based instruction, I am sure that the Alaska Department of Education will work with the legislature to ensure that our Alaska children will learn to read so that they can read and learn and make Alaska a destination. I thank you, and I'll answer any questions.
Thank you, Doctor. Questions, comments? Seeing none, thanks again for joining us. And I'd like to also stay in Ketchikan and now ask Mr. Johnson to come to the microphone, and that'll be followed by Fairbanks, Ms. Bates in Fairbanks. Morning, Mr. Johnson. If you could, please, your name and your affiliation, and please limit your testimony to 5 minutes.
Yes, good morning. My name is Al Johnson, and I'm a member of the local school board, but I'm not speaking in an official capacity today. I'd like to say that our population in our schools is roughly about 2,900 and falling fast, as you're well aware. Of that 2,900 students, we have 10% of our student body involved with some form of reading remediation. And I break that down into special ed. We have 290 children who are receiving special ed services of one kind or another. Of that amount, roughly 70 of those children are identified as a remedial reading situation of one nature or another. It's I can't give you the specifics on that, but the numbers involved are that. In addition, we have Indian Ed, Migrate Ed, and Chapter 1 Ed, which are contributing approximately 200 to 225 children to some form of remedial reading this point, so that comes back up to approximately 300, or again up to the 10% of our total educational systems children are involved in some kind of a reading program. The question is the depth of the phonics and the knowledge of the teaching process, and I say that by saying also that the tutors and the person on these programs are totally dedicated to improving these children. There is no shrinking from the fact that we have to do something. Whether we're doing everything that we can possibly and we do it in the proper order is still under investigation. The school board recently established that by policy or by goal that we would have all children leaving the second grade reading at grade level, and anything at the fourth stay nine or below would receive some form of remediation, and including, of course, the special ed factor and all those things. We have in our alternate school, or let me say this, out of 200 kids going in, the freshmen in our high school, give and take coming and going, we graduate 125. And when we go in and look at the dropout rate of the 75, those that we find this correlates probably pretty much to what Dr. Pfeiffer said. If they can't read in the third or fourth grade or at whatever level he indicated, they get frustrated and they drop out because the requirements and expectations in the high school don't really plug in remedial reading or anything the expectations are they can read. Some of our children go to an alternate school. We're finding that our population of an alternative school has risen from 80, I think, last year. I'll use that number. It may not be as accurate. But right now, we're sitting at 120 children at that alternative school. And we're finding that because of the recognizing the lack of reading ability that we have gone in with remedial programs, and that we're starting at as low as a third grade reading level in order to get to this. So I guess what I'd like to say to the group that I am just absolutely thrilled that we have some legislation. I think that individual boards want to tackle this problem, but on an individual basis, sometimes we get overwhelmed by statistics and facts and figures given out by, I don't want to use the word opposing side, but alternate sides of the argument. And I think we have to recognize that whatever we've been doing has not been as good as we can be. And so I'm encouraged by what you're dealing with. We have a test down here, gentlemen. It's the Gates-McGinnis test. We give it at the first grade. And if you are in, it's broken into nine stay nines, and it's thirds, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. If you're in the 1, 2, 3 stay nine, you're not, reflected as not reading it at any kind of grade level. We have 21% of our first graders last year at that rate. When we reach up and pick up the first stay nine of the second grouping and bring that down, that increases that percentage of children who aren't performing at what we consider in Ketchikan grade level. That brings it to 41%. The state of Washington, I think, just recently had the research that showed 50% of their children were not reading at grade level. So what I'm saying to you is Ketchikan is going to try to establish some sort of exit second grade that sounds to me is very much in line with what the state is trying to do with their legislation. I don't ask for mandations, but I would say to you, gentlemen, that don't let this thing shrink away, because I think with this tool that you're developing, those of us who want to make our children valuable assets in the community later on, we need all the help we can get. And I intend to talk to the finance department, hoping perhaps we can entice them to tie a program like this for additional funding consideration in their formula funding. Why not tie it to a program that we submit to the state, maybe somebody else in math, somebody else in language arts, but we would take reading and tie that to some financial obligation and say, we'll do this, you give us the money, and we'll prove to you that we're able to do what the legislators are asking for, and that is proof that what they invest in comes back to them. So I thank you again for the opportunity, and I hope that you can pursue it to a happy conclusion, and thank you again.
Questions or comments of Mr. Johnson? Seeing none, thank you, sir, for coming out this morning. I'd like to go to Fairbanks now and speak with Ms. Bates, and then we'll go to Petersburg, Ms. Norheim. Morning, Ms. Bates, your name and your affiliation, and please limit your testimony to 5 minutes. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Lou Bates. I'm the personnel manager for the Fairbanks School District, and what I was going to address is item C, which is the course requirements that you're listing. That the state is going to be looking at certification or licensure, you know, statewide. We were promised that in October. This item would need to be addressed under certification, most likely. It would be so subjective to try to find a course in analyzing the transcripts of an applicant to see that a certain ed course contained all of the requirements that are listed in that course. It would be very difficult. It would be you know, possible to control a course and make sure you had everything that was listed in there if it were, you know, after hiring, of course. But with certification, they put it, you put in the legislature, you know, voting the requirement for an Alaska Studies course, and that has required the universities here in Alaska going out and develop the courses. Certification had to approve them and, you know, put that into a requirement. Early childhood requires 6 semester hours of early childhood education. You know, gifted and talented requires 6 hours in gifted and talented education. The special ed department and the Department of Education approved those courses. And I just wanted to bring it to your attention how difficult it is to put something in like this. And that, you know, I would see, like to see it addressed, of course, under certification if that requirement is going to be there.
Questions or comments? Thank you, Ms. Bates, for coming out this morning and joining us. Let's go to Petersburg, and then we'll go to Commissioner Holloway in Anchorage. We're now in Petersburg. Ms. Brenda Norheim. Morning, Ms. Norheim. Your name and affiliation, and please limit your testimony to 5 minutes. Morning.
Good morning. My name is Brenda Norheim, and I'm a concerned parent, and I support Senate Bill 203 submitted by the Honorable Senator Taylor. I have two children in the public school system. I am speaking from experience that the whole language approach doesn't work well with all children. Sending my first child off to school, I had put all my faith in the system. At the second grade level, special reading classes were offered. I chose to opt out. We started a phonics-based program at home, and at the same time, I included my second child who was in kindergarten. We did see some improvement in our first child, but as we all know, old habits die hard. Our second child has an advantage, I believe, because phonics was first. At first grade, she was the top reader in her class, and I'm sorry to say that she has stagnated because she was encouraged to skip the word or guess. But I continually have to reinforce that she does not have to skip or guess at the word because she can use the tools that are phonics-based to sound it out. Why would our educational system continue to reinforce a method which statistically shows we lose 20% more of the kids who will then have to struggle through all their years of school and beyond? Thank you for giving me the time to speak.
And thank you. Questions or comments for Ms. Norheim? Thanks for coming out this morning. I'd like to go now to Anchorage. Commissioner Holloway, we'll... if you would, please, and then we'll go stay in Anchorage and speak with Mr. Willie Anderson. Morning, Commissioner.
Good morning. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for the opportunity to speak to the committee substitute for Senate Bill 203. I would first of all like to call your attention to finding number 5, which says a recent Education Week report gave our students in Alaska a D-minus grade. I would just like for the record to say that the Education Week graded policymakers and elements they believed needed to be in place to increase student performance. The magazine did not grade student performance. Our students didn't get the D-minus, we did. I share the desired result of this proposed legislation. All children must learn to read at high academic levels by age 8. There is no doubt about that. And I support the intent, and that is that phonics be a required part of a quality, comprehensive reading and language arts curriculum, remembering that phonics is not a method of teaching reading, but rather one means of decoding words. From a policy level, I believe we need to focus on student results, holding schools and communities accountable for student learning results, establishing required learning results through the implementation of student standards, focuses on what we want our children to know and be able to do. Senate Bill 257 would establish required learning standards and an assessment tied to those specific standards, so we would really know how well students are learning, tied to what is being taught. The approach being recommended through Senate Bill 257 would address not only the concern of reading competency, but reading, writing, and mathematics. Senate Bill 257 would hold schools and communities accountable for student learning results. And we really need to focus on the results. There's no doubt that ensuring that every Alaskan child is a competent reader must be our common goal. I would recommend that be done by legislating the result we desire, not all of the possible how-tos. Thank you very much for your time this morning.
Thank you, Commissioner. Questions or comments? Seeing none, let's stay in Anchorage and welcome Mr. Anderson. Thanks for your patience on Friday, Mr. Anderson. And if you would, please, your testimony and whom you represent, and if you could limit it to 5 minutes, please. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, sir, for being allowing me to testify by teleconference. I come before you to testify with some concerns about Senate Bill 203. The major concerns I have with 203 is that there's no funding mechanism in this bill, and currently our schools are suffering under the devalued dollars for the last 10 years. Based on the expert testimony last week from Texas, it would need 40 hours of intensive one-on-one work with the student to make an impact on the 25% that they project to fail the test. Based on just rough numbers, right now, based on the Department of Education, there are 126,000 students in the schools of Alaska. If we extrapolate from that, that half of those kids are elementary students, and that about half of those are K-3 students, we're talking about 31,000 students who would be impacted by this exam. If 25% of those students fail, we will have to provide them with at least 40 hours of intensive work, and based on just some rough numbers of on that, it would mean that we would need to create approximately 7,000 hours of work for teachers to provide that. And the cost of that is tremendous, and right now there's no physical note, there's no appropriation component in this bill. And I would say that we and I support the phonics as a part of a strategy for teaching reading, but we must cover how do we pay for this. We can't ask the school districts to take from what they're currently doing to pay for it. So there has to be a mechanism to pay for this implementation. And absent that mechanism to pay for it, I have trouble supporting this legislature and encouraging you to support it, because once again, we are putting a mandate on schools without any funding mechanism. And I would encourage you to minimally consider an additional referral with a funding system to the Finance Committee. At least based on the original version of the bill, it has one committee of referral, and that's your committee, Senator Wilson, Senate Hess. And there wouldn't be no other committee of referral, so apparently there was no contemplation for funding of this system. Additionally, the last thing I would say is that the whole process of testing and developing the test is another cost factor that is not factored into this bill. And we need to be accountable when we ask people to do something. We must provide them the mechanisms to do it. I would once again encourage you to look at the cost implication of this bill, consider that, and if you pass this bill, pass on along with the cost and a long-range cost for the next 10, 15 years of how this bill will be funded and this implementation will take place. Finally, the training mechanism for public school teachers and public school employees to implement this is another cost component that is not covered by this bill and is an issue that has to be covered at some point in time. Thank you for the opportunity to answer any questions.
Questions or comments? Thank you, Mr. Anderson, for joining us this morning. Is there anyone else on the teleconference network that hasn't had an opportunity to testify this morning? Then we'll leave the teleconference network and come back to the hearing room. And we have eight people like to visit with us this morning, and we'll start with Ms. Marjorie Fields. Marjorie? You could, everyone, please state your name, affiliation, if you could limit your testimony to 5 minutes, please. And thanks again for your patience.
Thank you for yours. I realize now that I should have written my name as Dr. Marjorie Fields, which it is. I am a professor of education at the University of Alaska Southeast. I teach teachers about how children become literate. I've published in many professional journals on this subject. I've written a book for parents, and I have written a teacher education textbook widely used around the country, currently in its fourth edition, on the topic of emergent literacy, better known as beginning reading and writing. According to Senator Wilkins' definition, if I were calling in from Texas, I would be a national expert. Senator Taylor's experts, who spoke on Friday, may be experts in something, but they're not experts in beginning reading. They are obviously in a different field of study. I've studied this topic very carefully and worked closely with teachers who are implementing recommended practices. I don't think I know of any well-informed teachers who don't teach phonics, or any experts in reading who advocate not teaching phonics. Teachers who understand how children become literate do teach phonics. They teach phonics in ways that help children to make sense of the sound-symbol relationships and to learn them more easily. This is called teaching them in a meaningful context. If you'll allow me, I would like to give you a little excerpt from my textbook that shows examples of how we can teach in a meaningful context, teach phonics in a meaningful context. Teaching in a meaningful context means teaching children to use phonics as they read and write. That is the purpose of phonics instruction. This purpose seems to have gotten confused, and phonics itself has sometimes become the goal. Some people think that teaching phonics in a meaningful context of reading and writing is not teaching phonics. I don't know where this idea comes from. Teaching phonics out of context is like teaching swimming out of the water or teaching bike riding without the bike. It's just awfully hard to do and not very useful. Another point about phonics is that it is only one part of reading. The letters and their sounds are important, but many times phonics principles aren't useful. English has a highly irregular pattern of letter-sound relations. You can tell I'm a teacher. I have handouts. Here is a brief summary of some of the major phonics generalizations taught, and it shows their percent of usefulness. If you do a little calculation, you will see that it is just over 50%. Now, that doesn't mean that they're not useful, but it doesn't mean that we can just rely on these, because almost 50% of the time they don't work. Reading always has been and always will be more than just learning to say the sounds. In order to get meaning from reading, readers need to also use other important skills and knowledge. In addition to using phonics when they don't know a word they are reading, readers do need to be able to figure out what word would make sense in relation to what else the print says. They need to figure out what word would make sense given the English sentence structure, grammar principles. The word READ is a good example of this. You don't know if it's read or read without that context, do you? The reader also needs to know what would make sense based on their knowledge of the content. This is not guessing. It is a thoughtful process. One more handout. This also is from my textbook, showing the relationship of all of those different cluing systems and how they all come together to create our goal of comprehension, not just word calling. Now, Senator Taylor said that he was very interested in additional research. So I have some, and I would like to just leave this as a piece of my counter evidence here. I don't know what you want me to do with it, but here it is. This material is much different than the support documents that Senator Taylor is using for his research data. It is not alarmist, it makes no sweeping generalizations, and it's not very good for 15-second media sound bites. Those studying literacy in depth do not put much energy into gathering sets of numbers and percentages about how many people can read or not. Serious researchers understand that such statistics tell us nothing about why reading problems exist or what to do about them. Also, statistics, as we all know, are not objective. They're based on subjective collection and analysis of data. Those studying literacy and illiteracy realize that there are multiple causes of reading problems and multiple solutions. Literacy rates are the result of a complex mix of social, cultural, academic, and even political issues. Socioeconomic status has been definitely shown to be the main predictor of success. It's pretty hard to change with a bill. There are no simple solutions for complex problems. Senator Taylor's research from the National Right to Read Foundation is presented as the truth. While debunking this massive research base, that this is just a little tiny sample of, as, quote, delicately, bull. Here is a small sample of which Taylor refuses to consider. Obviously, research can have conflicting results, but it depends on what you're looking for and how you go about finding it. If you are defining reading as decoding or word calling, and using group testing on young children to find it, you will get very different results than if you were defining reading as getting meaning or making meaning with print. In fact, one of Senator Taylor's main arguments, the need for remedial reading for college students, proves the opposite of what he thinks it does. College students are not usually put into remedial reading because they can't decode words, but because they can't understand what they read. These students need more real reading experiences, not more phonics lessons. Another fallacy in Senator Taylor's argument has to do with his idea that there has been 30 years of whole language in the schools and that reading scores have been falling all the while. I can tell you, I was teaching first grade 30 years ago, and I know for sure that in the schools, maybe different from in the research in academia, but in the schools, nobody had heard of whole language and no one was doing it. In fact, the reason that whole language was mandated in California and in many school districts around the country about 10 years ago is the failure of the skills-based approaches. So now we had that mandated, and now we have the failure of whole language. This failure is powerful evidence of why educative processes should not, and in truth cannot, be legislated. Whole language failed, as other approaches have failed before, because teachers were not adequately prepared for the complexity of the teaching process. Whole language was mandated as another magic bullet. It was forced on teachers who had no idea of what it was or how to do it. Some of those teachers apparently did, for some reason, think that whole language meant no phonics. With this bill proposed, we see the inevitable swing of the pendulum from one misunderstood idea to another. Let's face it, there are no quick fixes. This phonics bill is extremely simplistic. It reveals an appalling lack of understanding about the process of becoming literate, as well as about the diverse backgrounds and learning styles of children in Alaska schools. This bill means well. It has the same intent that we all do. We want all our children to succeed in reading. However, if you really want children to learn to read, and if you really want them to learn phonics, you will allow the teachers in this state to teach phonics in a meaningful context, along with other essential skills for reading. You will not limit the teaching and learning strategies available to Alaska's children and teachers. Professional educators must have the latitude to use many approaches for their reading instruction in order to meet the needs of each individual child and help all of Alaska's children become literate. In summary, I'd like to say, if we teach phonics skills in isolation as the reading approach, it's not only like teaching swimming without the water, it's like teaching only the arm strokes and ignoring the kicking and the breathing parts. We're not going to get very far.
Dr. Fields, questions or comments? Senator Lehman?
Dr. Fields, right at the end, you said something to the effect that we do not want to limit our approaches to teaching reading. I don't know that I see this bill as limiting those approaches so much as ensuring that this approach of phonics is a part of that total approach. And if you're reading something in it that's different from what I'm sensing, can you explain why you think it's limiting?
Well, if you read all that thick backup material that came with it, and if you think about the other variations on this bill that are being introduced around the country, it's, and some of them say you have to teach phonics out of context. You can only teach phonics. It makes a person nervous about where this really goes and what it really means. It's a little ambiguous, I agree. It's not totally clear that the phonics would have to be out of context in this bill. And it's not totally clear that children would be asked to decode without the help of other clues. So maybe the goal here would be simply to make sure that that is what is meant, that it doesn't end up being interpreted as just teaching phonics in isolation without the rest of the support. You know, things get misinterpreted pretty easily.
Well, I guess in follow-up, if you, as an expert in this field of emerging reading and beginning reading, draw that conclusion or have those concerns, then you're an expert in it. I don't know that any of us are, but then maybe either the record or the bill ought to be clarified to make sure that what is indeed what is said in the bill.
Except if that's what the bill means, then there's no need for the bill, because I don't think you'll...
Anyway.
Yeah. So I guess that's part of the reason why people are getting nervous. What does this mean? We're already trying to teach phonics. What is this trying to make us do differently?
Questions or comments? Particularly enjoyed this handout with the exceptions. I was looking at it, it was your testimony. I was looking on this. I've never understood why T-A-N-A-N-A, Tanana, is Tanana, and N-E-N-A-N-A isn't Ninana.
When I lived in Fairbanks, I had that same same confusion.
Maybe you can help me with that as you teach me reading.
Yeah, I'll work on it.
Thank you, Dr. Fields,
Thank
for
you.
Joining us this morning. Now, Ms. Tarlow, Mary Claire. Morning. Thanks for your patience and coming back this morning.
I, too, should have signed in as Dr. Mary Claire Tarlow. I was an elementary school teacher for 15 years. I have a PhD in literacy education, and my specialty is reading comprehension. I'm on the faculty at UAS, and I have been teaching there for 10 years. I teach reading methods, which is how to teach reading. My students will be elementary teachers teaching in kindergarten, first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth grade. I actually had the same utility chart and took it out of my materials, but I want to emphasize that English is not a phonetic language. It's not consistently phonetic. And also I want to emphasize what Dr. Field said, that phonics is taught in our public school system already. And there's a big difference between teaching phonics and intensive systematic phonics. And I think that's one term that's very disturbing to those of us in the field of reading education. I view this bill as dangerous. This is like passing legislation that requires doctors to treat cancer through one particular treatment. Everyone with cancer has to have chemotherapy, or everyone with cancer has to have surgery. Everyone with cancer has to have surgery, radiation, and chemotherapy. Most of us recognize that we don't know what doctors know, and we should leave medical diagnosis to doctors. Teachers are professionals. They're trained to understand the reading process and the learning to read process. They don't have all the answers, neither do doctors. Patients and students vary in, and they need individual diagnosis. Reading is a very complex process, and I think that the professionals who are trained are the best to try to figure out how to help. We have a lot of things that influence the learning to read process, some of them having to do with reading instruction, some of them not. Educators recognize the need for phonics knowledge, but phonics is only one piece of a complex system in the reading process. An effective reader uses many systems of language to read. We use the sounds of letters in words, which is phonics, along with the structure of the sentence, which we call syntax, and the meaning of words, which we call semantics. And I have some materials. The top sheet of that, you'll notice, if you read it, you are able to read or sound out those words quite well. And I'd appreciate it if you'd try to read that right now and see if you could answer the questions at the bottom. You'll notice that the questions at the bottom are very much like a lot of textbook questions. The thing is, you can read that, you can pronounce each word quite well. The Marlop was poving his comp. However, and it sounds like English, but the problem is that when it comes to being able to understand it, it doesn't give you any information. You have no semantics there, which is the third system that's crucial in trying to understand. Reading really is about understanding. It's about meaning making. Phonics gives you the sounds of words so that you can sound out the words, but it does not give you meaning, and reading is about meaning. Overemphasis on phonics can lead students to actually focus so hard on sounds that they don't get the meaning. Then they sound good when they're reciting orally, but if you ask them any questions about the content of what they read, they really can't tell you. This leads to many of the problems that we have later on in comprehension. The overemphasis on phonics also makes it harder for some students to learn to read. When they begin to learn to read, they already have much knowledge of the written language through their use of oral language. They know what many words mean and how sentences are put together in the way that make meaning. However, again, this is syntax and semantics. If they're focused too much on sounding out words, that's all they focus on, and the strengths that they could bring to the learning to read process are lost to them. I'm also concerned in this bill about the testing. Testing in first grade is very traumatic, especially the kinds of tests that are being suggested. Children at that level are being put on the spot as to what do you know, and they know they don't know very much. So what we're doing is making children less likely to be able to read because we're making them feel like they don't know. And when they do, they know a lot when they come to school in oral language that is necessary in learning to read. What concerns me most about legislating intensive systematic phonics is that all students don't need the same level of phonics instruction. Some need a more consistent, integrated, and balanced program over several years, but some learn very much of what they need very quickly in kindergarten or first grade. Indeed, some students come to school, they've learned phonics before they even come to school. If they already know it, why do we want to force children to sit through instruction for 3 years that they don't need? Teachers are trained to group children so they can provide the instruction they need and help each child develop to their own potential. They need to use the things that are in this bill, but they need to use a lot of other things, and that's what teachers are trained to know, what they need to use to teach children to read. Phonics knowledge and systematic phonics Doctor, instruction.
Just clear up for me real quickly. Is there a definition for intensive systematic phonics?
Intensive systematic phonics implies individual skills taught in isolation with the sound and the letter connected. It's not integrated into the system of reading when it's taught. And phonics knowledge and systematic phonics instruction are different things. We need phonics knowledge to read. We don't all need intensive systematic phonics instruction.
Please.
Who is a person who would need intensive systematic phonics instruction?
It's very hard to say who the child is. There are children who have not had a lot of literacy education before they come at the lap with the being read to. They haven't had ABC book kinds of things. They haven't listened to the sounds of language, done rhyming and that kind of thing. So they don't have an awareness of the sounds of the language. And sometimes for some children, that's a cueing system they need. Other children use other strengths of the language. There's lots of different things in the language that people learn to use when they read.
And I'm just wondering if maybe the language in this is very, very, very specific, then it should be a little broader. And if there is a way we can get to acceptable language, anyway, go ahead.
My concern is that this is a very complex process, and I have concerns that we can come to a language that really gives you all the complexities. It's kind of like looking at a symphony and saying, okay, you need this instrument, this instrument, this instrument, this instrument, but they all work together, and if you don't have them all working together, it's very difficult to be sure what instrument is needed. I just want to point out that those who don't need systematic phonics, for those it can be very deadly to have to go through all these skills when they already have the skills, and it misinterprets reading for them. It can kill their love of reading. And as I said, it can also make children ineffective readers in the sense of alerting them to one system and having them shut off other systems which are also important. We don't want to legislate intensive systematic phonics any more than we want to legislate chemotherapy for cancer, when a small operation may be all that's necessary. We do train our teachers in the complex systems of reading, and it's one of those things where, as I say, there are a lot of other factors that are involved with children learning to read. In your packets, I've included, again, other research that will counter Senator Taylor's. And I think that we need to leave this to teachers. If we want to beef up, what we want to do is, as has been said, worry about standards, worry about providing more resources for training teachers and continuing to train teachers throughout their career. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Tarlo. Questions? Senator Lehman?
I just have a comment. I have the answers to the four questions you've posed here. I don't understand my answers.
Exactly.
But I know I can give you the answers.
Exactly, and that's my concern. And that's why we have so many students in remedial reading in college, because they've learned to look at the answers or look at the questions at the end of the chapter, find the answers, but they've never really understood what they were reading. And they think that's what reading is, and that's my concern.
Thank you, Dr. Tarlo. Let's see, Ms. Brenda Weaver. She comes to the table. I was sitting here making some notes. If you're having good food and laughter with your daughter, how come you're not having good food and laughter with your dafter? Is that just the words are the same?
Good
morning,
ma'am.
Thank you for joining us. Thanks for coming back today, too, please.
Thank you for giving us the opportunity to speak. My name is Brenda Weaver. I'm president of the Juno Reading Council, which is affiliated with the Alaska State Literacy Association, as well as the International Reading Association. I'd like to applaud the legislature for recognizing the importance of literacy. I am concerned that phonics is going to be misinterpreted. A bill that is unenforceable, a law that's going to be unenforceable, is going to lead to expectations in teachers that, well, it says we got to do it, so we're going to do it this way. I think that that is the confusion in the wording. Reading is a patterning of complex behaviors. It is not just sounding out words. Phonemic awareness is dependent upon one's experience with the alphabetic script. Studies that the research I have shows that what a child comes to school with knowing is the most important factor in their reading ability. It is not being able to sound out words, it's being talked to one-to-one with an adult, having meaningful conversations, which is declining dramatically in our society because of television, Nintendos, etc. Parents are working, two families are working, they don't have a mom sitting there. I had a mom that sat and read to me for hours and hours when I was small. I came to school with that awareness. I was able to read. There are a lot of children that don't have that opportunity. I think a more effective use would be to, and I have research also that would back up all these, maybe leveling the playing field for those kids entering school. There are so many children that come to school without the tools they need to learn, without the language and interactions with the alphabetic script to develop the phonemic awareness. There are some programs that are beginning to attempt to do that. However, they're usually targeted at a specific culture. But if children are be able to come to school with a literacy-rich preschool experience, I would submit that it would be much more effective use of our time and our money and be able to reduce the remedial costs. The Reading Council endorses the use of phonics. We do so only in the context of a balanced reading program. Reading is much more than the ability to decode. Robert Scholes presented a paper at the annual meeting of the Society for Scientific Study of Reading in March of 97. It says, while some studies attempt to show that phonological awareness training improves students' decoding skills, no study has demonstrated that phonological awareness improves, enhances, or predicts a child's ability to understand a written text. Attempts to enhance reading skills in children by training in phonological awareness typically fail. Diane Lapp and James Flood make a case for integrated code instruction and advocate a balanced approach towards literacy instruction that helps children integrate what they already know with new strategies, skills, and content that best serve their reading interests. That was in May of 97. In Reading Teacher magazine. I think the term Literacy Restoration Act is a misnomer for the bill. I don't think we've lost literacy. I don't think it needs to be restored. I think teachers have recognized that, yes, at one time phonics was omitted in error, and they have recognized that and have addressed that issue. What this bill does not address is the fact that curriculums on local levels are addressing these issues. Teachers are professional educators who have recognized and taken steps to rectify it. Standards and expectations that school districts are held to regarding outcomes is what should be examined. And I believe 257 is examining those. I think that, especially in Alaska, given our wide diverse populations, that those school districts, if they're held to high standards, high expectations, they are the best determiners of who and how to best meet those needs of the students in their areas. This bill does not take into effect the second learners or the limited English proficiency students or the quality programs that are total immersion programs in dual languages in our state. No one way works best for all children, and phonics is an important way, but as others have pointed out, it is only one tool in a bunch of tools that are needed for this complex behavior of reading. I think, do you have any questions? I was trying to make it more brief than 5 minutes. So.
You hit it right on the head. Questions or comments, Ms. Weaver? Do you deal mostly with your Reedy Council? Do you deal mostly with people above 18 years old or under?
It is a professional organization that has teachers as well as parents and invites public members to become members of it, and we do a lot of in-services trainings and social promotion of reading and with in and out of the schools.
So how would you interact with, say, a grade school, your council?
With a grade school, my uh-huh. council? Well, currently we're bringing the right group in to do workshops for grades 2 through 5 teachers. We have provided workshops for teachers in many areas, including phonics in the whole language programs and phonics specifically and integrated into your classroom.
Oh, so you'll deal more with the instructor than the student?
In my capacity as a reading teacher, as a reading council president, yes. I'm also a literacy leader and a reading teacher.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that. Other questions or comments? Seeing none, thanks for joining us and coming back this morning. Let's see, from Friday holdovers, Ms. Mary Armstrong. Morning, and thanks
Good morning.
For being here.
Thank you for getting me back on the agenda. My name is Mary Stars Armstrong. I'm the curriculum coordinator for the Juneau School District, and I appreciate having some time just to visit with you this morning. I thank you for giving attention to this most important topic of our students learning how to read. The Juneau School District is committed to literacy success for all our students. We have a literacy goal. We are part of the bigger effort of America Reads. We do, in fact, want to have all our students be literate. We value literacy and early literacy by putting supplemental resources in each of our elementary schools, by having highly trained literacy leaders at each school. Plus, we have ESL, English as a Second Language, and LEP, Limited English Proficient instructors at our schools also. Our draft core content and our curriculum are based on the standards, on the English Language Arts standards. They do include reading strategies, part one of which is phonics, and also many skills and strategies for comprehension. Research in literature suggests that we adapt instructional practices to meet the diverse needs of our learners. Some of Juneau students come to school ready to read. They come reading. And some students come to us not speaking English at all. Some come to us with very limited English proficiency. And they all challenge us, and that taking care of them and meeting their needs is our charge and our responsibility. Our literacy leaders, our teachers, our instructional staff, you have many strategies to assist our students in learning to read. And this situation is mirrored all over the state. It's not only in Juneau. There is no one-size-fits-all panacea. Literacy is larger than learning to read. It involves a balance of reading, writing, speaking, listening, and thinking. And in the context of learning to read, phonics is just one part. Phonics is not a method of teaching reading, but rather a method of decoding words. And phonics is one of the several strategies that readers use to make sense of text and is most effective when used hand-in-hand with other meaningful instruction. Phonics instruction must always be used to help students make sense of what they read and not as an end in itself. There's no reason to be able to decode words if you're not reading meaningful connected text. Decoding words and sounding out are not reading. Reading is a meaning constructing process that requires connected, relevant text. This proposed bill offers one part of a solution and offers it out of context. To promote phonics in isolation gives an incomplete message. Phonics instruction, instruction in the use of meaning, and instruction in the use of the structure of English language are all essential, along with good literature and exemplary teaching from top-notch staff. That's what creates a balanced reading program. And unless teachers and children understand that phonics is one and only one of three necessary cueing systems to be integrated into the process of real reading, phonics knowledge is meaningless. So getting past the emotion that is attached to this polarizing debate is really requisite for our making strides in our students' literacy learning. We know that students need to do a lot of reading and writing, study letters and words, and be exposed to whole selections of literature that confirm that what they know about how language works. And we know that able teachers carefully orchestrate multiple activities that require students to engage in listening, speaking, reading, and writing in order to meet content goals, skill goals, and literacy goals all at the same time. Legislating phonics or any curriculum instructional program without regard to the whole literacy picture, I believe, is short-sighted. Our suggestions is to work, revise this bill to include attention to all the cueing systems, to making meaning, to looking at structure, and to looking at visual, not just simply one. We invite you to come and visit our elementary schools. We have six, all within 15 miles of here. We have wonderful instruction going on every day in reading and in literacy, and you're very welcome to come. I just want to make two other points quickly. One, also in line five, I just for the record, I wanted to ask that some attention be taken care to the language in line five that says the students were given a D-minus grade in standards and assessment, and they weren't. It was our system. And I just also want to register a concern about assessment for grades first, second graders being taught, being assessed with a Norm Russman standardized test. This doesn't seem to be, in our experiences, is that the best way for us to ascertain students' knowledge at that young age. So I thank you for your time and your attention to this most important topic.
Thank you, Ms. Armstrong. Questions or comments? Senator Lima?
Was there a comment on that lesson just at second grade, or did you mean any of the?
Oh, first and second grade.
First and second.
I would say this: the younger students. We do look at third graders with Norm reference tests.
Okay, and you think third grade is appropriate?
But third grade is appropriate.
By the time you get to third grade, you think that's,
yes, sir,
you've had enough. Okay.
The staff for Senator Taylor's here, and I know she has written down the line five issue.
Okay. Good. I just wanted for the record not just you. To have
also,
that.
Also, kind of an aside, in the Juneau School District, when does a child get the first opportunity for a foreign language?
Well, I think middle school.
Middle school, seventh, yes. Sixth or seventh.
Yes, and that actually, that you mind that you bring that up, is that it was one of the, at our school board's retreat in the beginning of this year, it brought up that we really do want to look at bringing a second language, a world language, into our elementary schools. So we're looking at that.
Okay. Thank you for being here this morning.
You're
coming
welcome.
Back today. Now let's see. Now, Mr. Rose from the Alaska Association of School Boards.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Carl Rose, Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards. I'll try to be brief within your 5 minutes period. The Association of Alaska School Boards opposes the committee substitute for Senate Bill 203, and I'd like to qualify why. I don't want to misrepresent the fact that we don't oppose the whole idea of phonics. Phonics is a part of our programs across the state. What we are concerned about is the mandated process that is being reviewed under this bill. A lot of time and effort has been paid to the issue of standards, and standards represents the what, why, and how of what we're trying to do in education. What do we want our kids to know? Why do we want them to know it? And then how would we go about doing this? It also represents the ability to develop curriculum that represents the standards, and some of them are worldly. It also represents a tool that we'd use to measure the progress, as well as the professional development that some have alluded to earlier. The ability of our teachers to be prepared to deliver that curriculum is critical. I also want to talk about the current state of affairs that schools are currently under. And I might add that I'm not a professionally trained teacher. I'm a businessman. I was first elected to the school board in 1975. my membership represents the governance of public schools, and I think sometimes that process is poorly understood. This past weekend, we talked about some of the effects of the American Disabilities Act, Family Medical Leave Act, Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. We talked a little bit about the required reporting processes that are currently in place on the regulations and law. The list goes on. I have a number of lists, but the questions we asked ourselves, what is the policy implication to schools? What kinds of things do we have to do to comply with some of the requirements? Secondly, what is the administrative workload in terms of manpower that's required to come into compliance with many of the requirements? And I'm telling you, the list is quite long. What kind of categorical funding and mechanisms are put in place to address these mandated requirements? And if it's inadequate or not mandated or categorically, where does that money come from? The money comes from 01, regular instruction. The money that you give us, and you're going to measure our performance in the area of reading, writing, and mathematics. The money that you give us to provide instruction is being spent in a number of other ways that we're mandated to do by law. I'm giving you a backdrop of what currently exists in schools. Schools are under tremendous pressure, and I'm not here crying. I'm here trying to educate people as to the pressure that school districts are under to comply with laws that have been mandated on us. We look at the committee substitute for Senate Bill 203 as another mandate, unless it's accompanied with some level of funding. You've heard here from the professionals, and I won't reiterate many of the things that they've said, but I would ask you, not only on this bill, but on bills that we're going to be dealing with in the future, the issue of the quality initiatives that are encased in Senate Bill 257, to consider those initiatives without adequately funding for the success, I think is a terrible mistake, because speaking for my membership, we're being set up for failure in many ways. If we have an expectation that we want to see certain things happen in school, but we don't allow ourselves to spend our money in that direction or appropriate it for success, I can predict what the outcome is going to be. And so I would ask you to consider these mandates. Individually, each one of these mandates has a constituency, and they're important. And I don't suggest that we not pay attention to public policy as we know it. But I do suggest that the combined impact of all these mandates is a tremendous downward pressure on school budgets. And so I'd ask you to consider that as you move forward. I believe the sponsor of this bill has good intent. Okay, I'm not going to sit here and debate the language, and the professionals have already talked to you about what they believe. What I am saying is the governance of schools in Alaska is under considerable pressure. We're trying to get a clear message. What is it that we value as a state? How can we get our appropriations in line with that? And with that, I try to answer any questions. I know my testimony is largely philosophical, but I think when we talk about education in the overall, we have to consider what I've just mentioned. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rose. Questions, comments? I met with school board in Fairbanks in the first week in December, and I asked them, I said, why don't you give me three mandates that you have to ascribe to that cost you money that you'd like to see repealed? I haven't heard from him yet, but I think I will, maybe today. So anyway, I'd ask you the same question. If you ever as a group talked about asking the legislature to repeal some?
Yes, we have. We've compiled a list, and it's an extensive list. What my suggestion is that we take a look at the things that we're required to do. I mean, things have been done in Congress that we may not have any control over here. But we do have some things in the state that we have compiled, and I will present it to you. And I will say that, you know, with the passage of House Bill 465, those things are not on here. Those things are instructional, and we believe that the things that are instructional we should have some guidelines on. 465 does that. But there are other things that we're required to do that have nothing to do with reading, writing, and arithmetic. And just off the top of my head, I'll say we're mandated to provide insurance for the state's investments in our schools. Lack of deferred maintenance make those that investment at risk every year that we don't address major maintenance. There are a number of things that we have to provide to, you know, under our school system that have never been discussed. And so when I get that list compiled, I'll bring it to you. But it won't be very long because we've already started it, and I'd like to have that discussion with you.
Thank you. Other questions, comments? Thank you. Mr. Rose, now. Mr. Marshall? No, he didn't. Morning.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, appreciate the opportunity to come, and I'll not try to reiterate much of what we said earlier and then what's been said during the course of the presentation, but, you know, we do believe that phonics and whole language ought to be integrated as part of a reading strategy. And our concerns with the bill in specificity is if you look at, you know, page 2 of the bill and you look at page lines 4 through 9, it does prescribe a couple of things. One, it does say the governing body of a district shall include, and it goes on to say phonics and spelling. But then down on line 8, it also indicates that the language education curriculum must include. And then it pretty much specifies in lines 9, 10, and 11 what's to be included in that curriculum. The question becomes, it does not make mention of whole language. It does not make mention of utilization of words and context. So the apprehension that we have is that for the most part, we are looking at a section here that is pretty specific as it applies to phonics only. The other piece is that we do feel that local schools and teachers should determine the curriculum of children and develop a range of instructional strategies so that we are dealing not just with teaching, but we're dealing with assessment. And we're dealing with remediation as we identify those needs. The bill doesn't necessarily speak to that. Down on line 12, we had the same concern that was mentioned earlier about testing in grades 1 through 3. It does stipulate that those nationally normed reference tests will be given at grades 1 through 3. The question is that the applicable age that research would tend to indicate are those grade levels that would need to be taught in order to achieve those outcomes we strive for. The other is, you know, since we're dealing with reading, I guess, you know, if you look at the definition of the bill, it does say that a school is basically a municipal school district and an REAA school district. But we assume that when we talk about this, we are talking about homeschool correspondence programs, that testing requirement would be mandated there. We have a concern that children who are in certain private and secular programs should also be tested, because many of those kids will actually come across from one school system to the other, whether it's secular to public or public to secular. And again, if we're trying to educate, and I think it's worthy, on line 12 it says all students. You know, if that is a goal, then why are we only possibly looking at one segment of the school community? We had a concern, and if you look at, again, line 12 through 23, it does prescribe two things again, if you look at it carefully. One is that it requires a test, I guess would be the Iowa test of basic skills, if you want to pull that one out of the hat. But If you go down, it also says that a district must also test those children or provide strategies for those children who fall below the 25%, the lowest 25%. Now, to me, grades 1 through 3, I wonder how that's going to be done. Has the committee envisioned, you know, we give the test and then we're developing strategies to overcome these areas, how that will be done? Our concern is, will the price of testing come at the course, come at the price of instruction? I mean, schools, for the most part, are stretched, and who pays for this? If schools are mandated to pay it, it'll come out of my child's instructional opportunity. And by the way, Senator, you asked the question about foreign language and exposure. Last Friday at 9 a.m., my first grader got exposure at Ock Bay Elementary in a beautiful multicultural program, and he was using words that I hope I can use. And then I'll wrap up. The other thing that just in line 24 through line 28, it says a course, and basically the specificity of the bill, it's got eight little components that this course should include. I talked to elementary teachers over the weekend. The question is that course actually available? And then is this really those eight components, are they not taught throughout the coursework of preparing to teach at the elementary level? If it is a course, the only anxiety I bring to the table, and it's a memory of 1992-93 when we required the 6 years or the 6 hours for history and cultural studies, we were assured that course would be available and folks would have the opportunity to, practicing teachers, to go out and take the course. The problem is, in many instances, that did not happen, and we had some teachers that, put their certificates in jeopardy through the recertification process. I know this is hiring preference, but, that's a preference. That's the job. You got to get the job to get the check. So that's a concern we've got. Is there a one single course available that embodies all of this? And then I think that just in suggesting thoughts on the bill, and we commend the committee for coming forward with an idea on reading and the importance of reading. I know the governor said that every fourth grader ought to be able to read by the time they exit the fourth grade. But the bill may want to look at what strategies can we use to help parents break children away from televisions to books. Is there something there that we can use to assist parents? Meaningful research. A lot of research has been done. It's been referred to. Is there ways that we can develop strategies to basically ground instruction in research and allow teachers at the district level to actually sit down in collaboration with other colleagues, take that research, develop programs that's designed to educate our children better? I think another resource or another element of assistance that might be addressed in this bill is the Department of Education. As I understand it, their resources have been restricted, constrained, cut, whatever you want to say. But is there a need here for, requiring that the Department of Education basically assist districts in efforts to help our kids read at the levels that we want them to read at? And then finally, curriculum. We believe that curriculum ought to be addressed. Now, whether it's to assist school districts in developing that curriculum or the state of Alaska in developing curricular strategies for its 53 school districts, that needs to be addressed. And we struggle here If you just simply say phonics or whole language or whatever, and you're leaving a piece out over here called the curriculum, do you achieve what you're saying over here by not addressing the curricular needs on the other hand?
You could conclude, please.
I'm concluded. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Hansen?
Are you going to be getting to the other bill today, or?
Morning.
Morning.
Thank you. Would, please.
I'm Susan Hansen. I'm with the Alaska State Literacy Association, which is part of the International Reading Association, and the Juvenile Reading Council is part of that association, too. And I'm concerned about the bill because I thought there was an overemphasis on phonics in it in isolation, and I'm representing many other educators that belong to the State Literacy Association. And I have a pamphlet from the International Reading Association on the role of phonics in reading instruction. They support the role of it, but they also see it as part of integrated within reading and writing, and real-life reading and writing. And this lady named Patricia Cunningham wrote this book called Phonics They Use. And throughout this book, there's wonderful phonics activities, but she closes and she integrates throughout the book how whenever we're doing phonics activities, we also tie it back to why they're doing it, and that's so that they can be better readers and writers. So we teach children about phonics through reading and writing. I'd like to pass these out to you right now. I refer to some of them. Before I came here, I worked with I do volunteer work at Glacier Valley with a boy that's in the first grade, and he's having trouble learning to read, and I think he's the type of student we're talking about. Isolated phonics didn't work for him, doesn't work for him. He needs to tie it to what he knows. He knows his name is Thomas, and he can write that. And he knows, now he's learning that it starts with the sound of T, and that's a letter. The word Thomas is a word. And it ends with an S, and that makes a sound. So he's got those letters down, T and S. And so when he reads, I refer back, well, if he's stuck on the word two, I say, what sound does your name start with? And then we go to T. And then he could get, and he's thinking about what would make sense, like on this paper, on the second page. He's using his phonics cues as far as the T sound, and his meaning cues as far as what would make sense in that story. The boy is going to, and then he uses his meaning cues, and then it sounds right. He's going to the store. So I'm helping Thomas learn to read by using the phonics that he knows already through his name. He knows the word the, he knows mom, he knows love, he knows I. So I'm using those words. And that's what whole language teachers do. They go from what the child knows to what he needs to know. And we teach teachers, and they know that it's children first learn to read by learning consonant sounds, then they're ready for ending, and they're ready for blends, digraphs, the vowels. But you can't teach them all those things at once or all those rules in isolation, or they'll get totally mixed up. Children go, they learn, especially the ones that are hard to teach, learn to read by associating it with the known. So by listening to what they know, if we start a lesson with having, say, children write words they know, and then talk about the sounds in those words, then they're learning consonant sounds. And then we go to having them read books, and when they're stuck on a word, they can use all their cueing sources. Thomas read the cat sat on the mat, and it doesn't say that. So at the end of him reading that page, or actually at the end of the book, I came back to that, and I said, Thomas, what would you expect to see at the beginning of the word cat? And he said, k. And I said, well, does this word start with a k? And he said, duh. And then he looked at the picture. I said, oh, you use the picture cues. That is so good. That's what good readers do, and you use the first letter. And he read it correctly that time, the dog sat on the mat. And that's what we're talking about when we say use the whole language, use the whole book, get the phonics in there, but teach it within reading and writing. And then we did some writing this morning, and I know conferences are coming up, so I asked Thomas to write about, tell me about what he wants to show his mom and dad when they come. And he said his mom would come, and he says, I want to share a good thing with her. So I said, well, Thomas, show me what the word I looks like. So he wrote it up here on the practice page, and then I had him write down there. I said, I knew he didn't know the word want because he's a beginning reader, and you want to go with the known so they feel like readers and writers. So I said, what do you hear at the beginning of the word want? He said, W. At first he wrote this, so I said, well, this is how you make a W. So I made a mental note that, yes, Thomas needs to learn the W sound. And then I helped him write it, and he heard the T at the end because his name starts with T, so he wrote that. So he, and then you left his finger there. He's learning that you leave spaces between words. And so he wrote the word, he wrote the W, and I wrote the rest, and he put the T at the end because that's where he is. He's just learning beginning sounds. He knows the word two. He didn't know the sh yet because that comes later on developmentally. Kids cannot learn all those things at once. And as we train teachers, we train them to know by watching children. What is it they know now? What are they ready for? When will they, what will they be ready for next? So I just don't think we can legislate to teachers of phonics that they have to teach in a certain lockstep order or anything. We need to help them learn. And they do know that you observe children and you see what they're ready for. And then you teach to it. And another step with this writing, which is part of whole language teaching too, she can turn it into a puzzle and look at the phonics they have to do. I said, I wrote on the outside of his puzzle, I want to share good things with my mom. And he had to put these words back together again. And to find the word good, he had to look for the G sound. And that's a new sound that he's learning. So he worked on it, and he was able to put this puzzle completely back to match the story he had written. And now he takes this home and reads this to his mom. So I think that's what we need to do, is help teachers see how they learn that the phonics is important, but you do need to integrate it, not only phonics, but what would make sense in their language, what would sound right in the English language. And with all of that, they can become good readers and go with the known. So thank you for the opportunity to share for the Alaska State Literacy Association and myself as an educator, now a retired teacher who's doing workshops in the area of reading.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. Thanks for sharing that with us. It's very interesting. Senator Lehman?
Can I borrow that book for a day?
Sure. I am doing a workshop.
How do I get it back to you? But
I could pick it up tomorrow.
Will you be here? Or
I live in town, but I'm leaving town tomorrow night. So
okay.
That'd be great.
I'm in 115, so okay. I'll just have it out of the desk.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Ms. Hansen. One final witness for Senate Bill 203. We won't be taking up Senate Bill 306 today, because we need 15 minutes for the Brain Injury Act update. So let's see. Mr. Phillips, please stay with us. There you are.
Mr. Chairman, distinguished senators, thank you for your time this morning. My name is Guy Phillips, and I'm speaking to you as a parent of five. I'm a grandfather. I hold a seat on the Harborview Elementary Site Council. I'm an active member of our PTA. I volunteer with a local Mentoring Matters program, and as well, I spend a great many hours each week volunteering in my children's classrooms. Much of that work involves tutoring young students in reading, writing, and math, so I'm speaking to you today from a very broad base of experience. It's my strong conviction, and that of the majority of my constituency, my friends, and my associates, that the business of this legislature is not and should never be to dictate individual curriculum concerns in our schools. This important work should be dealt with exclusively by our respective boards of education, with intensive input and guidance from the teachers and the administrators who have dedicated their lives to the science of educating our young people. This is why we have an education system in place in this country. These dedicated professionals should be allowed to do their jobs unencumbered by legislative intervention. I've heard some of Senator Taylor's comments, both on the radio and here in this room last week, regarding this bill. He's made reference to, and I quote, a liberal clique with new vogue ideas. He's even gone so far as to repeatedly accuse our educators of abandoning the needs of 70% to 75% of our students. All this from a man who has done nothing to help fund the schools. And I ask you, Senator Taylor, wherever you are, who dropped the ball on whom here? We absolutely cannot allow this conservative versus liberal partisan rhetoric to pervade an institution that's working diligently to instill in all of our children, those of liberals and conservatives alike, an attitude of mutual cooperation, trust, and respect for one another. We must, gentlemen, keep this political posturing out of our schools. I myself am a moderate. I subscribe to no one's agenda on a wholesale basis. And I can assure you that the many educators that I come into contact with in the course of any given week are not working from anyone's political agenda. Rather, they're working to ensure the best possible education for not 25 or 30%, but the entire 100% of our students. And I find Mr. Taylor's remarks to the contrary to be egregious, self-serving, and flagrantly ill-informed. Ladies and gentlemen, education is not only a finely crafted art, it's an ever-evolving science. To revert to an outdated method of teaching, one that's been under the scrutiny and revision of our educators nationwide for the past 20 to 30 years, would serve only to set that process back by at least 20 to 30 years. In the 60s, when many of today's parents and teachers were in school, former phonics instruction was a big part of our core of our reading program. Had been for many years. Now, this was such a good thing. Why was adult literacy such a widespread problem that federal programs to combat it were in place well into the 70s? A poor emphasis on phonics let down several generations, yet this body sits here in consideration of repeating the same mistakes. If any of you had the opportunity to look over the research that was left for you on Friday, and you did because some of it was left by Dr. Fields, you'll see that the rules of phonics, the exceptions to them are many. Our math differed a little bit, ma'am. I came up with 45%. She came up with 51%. We're splitting hairs. 50% is nothing to base the core of our reading programs on. We need to teach the rules of phonics to these kids where and when they do apply, as educators have been telling you over the past couple of days. Now, it's true that some teachers went too far when phonics was first de-emphasized. My oldest daughter was in California in the 80s. She received no phonics instruction whatsoever. The child couldn't comprehend her reading, and she couldn't spell. Obviously, that was a failure. Her younger sister was in the same system in the 90s after phonics had been reintegrated to a small degree, much like the system we have here in our state, and her language skills are much stronger with a certain amount of integrated phonics instruction. Her success in the language arts is attributable to a broad-based, well-rounded reading program, much like we have right here in Alaska. Now, the key, as you've been told, is immersion in the literature. This is what keeps these kids' interest long enough for them to learn the rules, and it works. Our school district has built a comprehensive reading program here in Juneau that combines all of the elements necessary in learning to read. They learn sight words and letter sounds. They're taught to explore the words and the pictures, to connect, to anticipate the story, and extract the meaning of the text. They're given the benefit of all of the reading skills that the educators who've spoken before this committee have outlined to you. This is reading, gentlemen, and this is what they're learning. Sir, phonics is just a small part of the equation.
I didn't start my time right there. If you could please just start to conclude, I do need 15 minutes for the next subject.
I will start to conclude, sir. Now, of the 50-plus K-1 students that I work with and around every week, a vast majority of these are reading at or beyond their grade levels. My own first grader is reading well into second grade material. He's extremely proficient at spelling, has a very large vocabulary for a boy of 7, and his sister's right on track behind him in kindergarten. These are average kids. They're learning to read successfully. They're enjoying the process, as are most of their classmates. Now, if any one of you truly believe Senator Taylor's contention that 75% of these children are not being taught to master the language, and you owe it to yourselves, to your constituents, to spend an hour, a day, a week in the classroom, volunteer with your local Mentoring Matters program, and experience this process hands-on. You'll be surprised at the success at which these modern teaching methods are being applied. I work twice a week with a handful of first graders who are in danger of falling behind the pack. That's why I'm there for them. Through the simple process of working one-on-one with these children by applying the principles of a reading program already in place, these students are progressing much faster than before, and I have every confidence that these kids will be reading at or above their grade level in just a few months. If I'm required to inundate these students with a long list of so-called rules and their exceptions, well, it seems that it'd be a little scary for them now. It's kind of tedious now. That would turn it into an insurmountable chore, and we don't want to do that to these kids. The program is working, Senators. I implore you to kill this needless and inflammatory bill before it gets in the way of serious education reforms that are already in place. Senate Bill 203 is not in your job description. Funding the process of education, however, is a responsibility that this legislative body is sworn to undertake, and on that note, if you'll indulge me for a moment,
you have about 30 seconds.
I would like to say that the condition to which our school funding has been allowed to deteriorate is absolutely reprehensible. Alaska is among the wealthiest states in the union, that our classroom ratios are at an overwhelming 26 to 1. Much-needed positions such as full-time reading specialists are being cut due to ridiculous rules in federal funding. School districts all over the state have been had to offer early retirement to their tenured staff in order to allow them to be here, hire less expensive, less experienced teachers. Cuts to teaching and support staff and cuts to programs have gone on and continue to go on across the board, and I submit it is a responsibility of this committee, the Senate Committee on Health, Education, and Social Services, to investigate the problem of school funding with your eyes and ears wide open, and to introduce and pass legislation this session to increase school funding across the board so we can hire the support we need. The responsibility lies squarely on this body's shoulders to ensure that the educators of this state have the full benefit of the tools, the manpower, and the facilities necessary to ensure the best possible education for all of our young people. And I thank you again for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Phillips. That concludes testimony on Senate Bill 203. We'll hold the bill for further work. I'd like to go immediately to an update. We have some